Today on Marketing Mavericks, we talk about how to promote your content online. Is it spray and pray? We talk to Pomplamoose. We talk to a lot of other marketing strategists and how to use Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and more. Stay tuned. Coming up next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Marketing Mavericks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This episode of Marketing Mavericks is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is the best way to buy and manage domain names. It's simple, honest, and easy to use. For 10% off your first purchase, go to Hover.com and enter promo code MM7. And by NatureBox, order great tasting healthy snacks delivered right to your door. Forget the vending machine and get in shape with healthy, delicious treats like cranberry macaroon granola. To get 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. To Marketing Mavericks. We're at the intersection of marketing and technology, where we talk about everything that's happening on the web, how to promote your business, and what a brand's doing using social media. How are they using the internet? Today, we're going to talk about the intersection of YouTube, other sites like Patreon, social media, and how people are actually promoting content online. How are you, as an author, getting your book out there? How, as a musician, are you promoting it? Are you bypassing publishers and record labels? Well, some people are and doing a great job. So we've got a great lineup of people who use YouTube and who are artists as well as educators in the space. Our first interview is someone who has been on Twit TV with Leo Laporte on our triangulation. I'm a big fan of them. It's Pomplamoose, Natalie Dawn, Jack Hotney, Pomplamoose.com, your band, and super excited. You're coming out tomorrow with a new album, right?
It's true.
Success, baby.
Yeah.
How long have you guys been, Pomplamoose? Like, when did you guys get started?
2008.
Yep. But we met in 2006. That's when we started dating, and we were afraid that having a band together would ruin our relationship.
So, go ahead.
It does do that for a lot of people. But it didn't. Yay! Yeah.
Working together can be tough, especially when you just start. This is kind of a startup sort of like business, in that although you've done phenomenally well, and as some startups do, you guys have this is your second, I mentioned, your second album. How did you get started with music? Like, what did you decide to do to finally get your music out there?
In terms of promoting our music or playing music, because music, I mean, both of us have been musicians now for decades.
Is that what brought you together? How did you meet?
Yeah, we met at school. Natalie was opening for a band that I was in at the time, and I heard her playing afterwards, and I went up to her and I totally hit on her and told her that I loved her music.
He did.
It was all over.
He could listen to my voice all day.
I said that.
And he said, marry me. That was the conversation we had.
Yeah, that brought us together.
That's a great story. So, okay, you love the music, and you decided to start probably playing together. It was something you enjoyed, I'm sure. But when did you decide to start doing this for monetary reasons and actually start a band together that you were going to promote and perform?
Yeah, well, let's see, we quit our jobs, in like 2009, 10, maybe. The goal from the very beginning was to make a living as a musician, to make music that we liked and to be able to support ourselves doing it. We put out an album and sold a bunch of songs one month for our covers album on iTunes. We put it out. It's called Tribute to Famous People. It had a bunch of like covers on it. Mm-hmm. And I think we sold 30,000 songs the month we put it out, which is when we finally realized, okay, this is like enough money. We don't have to work you know, separately from making music.
Yeah. Which was really, really exciting for me. I was, I had just graduated from college, and my dad told me that I should just spend some time focusing on the band instead of getting a job, and to just try it out for a year, and that he would, you know, he would help me out for the first couple months, but then I have to sort of be making it on my own. And by the fifth month, I was making a living on album sales and didn't need money from my folks anymore, which was like crazy. So yeah. Oh, the call ended. No, you're still there.
This is live.
Oh my God.
Live. This is what happens with live television. So, okay. So you obviously, a lot of people probably, you know, have their own passion about their own music and they want to perform. How did you decide to come up with a way to get people interested in your music? Did you go straight to YouTube? What was the strategy that you put together after you created the content to get people to pay you for what you were creating?
Everything. The strategy was throw everything at the wall and pray that something sticks. And if nothing does, then find a whole bunch of new things to throw at the wall. I mean, we tried everything: touring, playing local shows, playing lots of local shows, inviting your friends ad nauseum to local shows, MySpace, inviting people to listen to your music on MySpace, Facebook.
Buying people on MySpace.
I mean, you name it, we tried it. And I think that's, everybody always asks us, hey, you know, how did you guys do it? What's your thing? And our thing was try a million things until something works. Because if you have something good to say and you know, and you feel like your work is quality and you make good stuff that you know, at least you believe in and you're passionate about, there's a way to package it so that other people recognize that too. And for us, YouTube is just packaging, right? The songs are the same as they've always been. It's just songs that we believe in and songs that we like. We just packaged them a little differently by uploading them to YouTube and putting videos on them. And that made all the difference for us. It may not be what makes the difference for that person. That person might use Vine, or this person might sign a record deal, or that person might, you know, upload to SoundCloud and build a community on SoundCloud. This person might use Patreon, whatever it is. It's always going to be different for each person. There's a million ways to skin a cat. The thing that's the same about all of those things is that if you try a million things, one of them is bound to work. And that's what we did. We tried everything and YouTube worked.
So, you know, the conversation has been that YouTube doesn't really pay a lot of money just to have your music on YouTube. How does that work for you? You obviously are pushing people to iTunes. I'm assuming that that's where you're making most of your money and not on YouTube. Is that right?
Yeah, we make a living mainly from MP3 sales and also brand integrations. We recently signed with a multi-channel network, which is called CDS. It's kind of like a label, I guess, for YouTube artists. But it's mainly focused on getting brands to work with you on your videos that feel like a good fit. So for example, we've got a Buick brand integration coming up that we're going to be doing this weekend. And we've done other things in the past. Also, we've gotten some, you know, good stuff from TV Sync. It's funny. You don't make money on YouTube through the ads really that run over your channels. There's
almost nothing.
Almost
with Pomplamoose, you know, Pomplamoose has now 100 million views in aggregate, and
wow.
we make between $100 and $200 a month from YouTube ads. So
yeah.
The rest of our money, you know, comes from now between $5,000 and $10,000 a month comes from Patreon.
Yeah.
And you know, occasionally we'll get a brand deal that'll pay $15,000 or $20,000, which is awesome. Like the Buick one that Natalie was talking about.
It's not something that you can count on. And the nice thing about Patreon is that you can actually project that you're going to make a certain amount each month because if you put out two videos, you're going to make two times whatever you make per video.
That's our Patreon page there.
Yep.
Yes, and you have been, there you go. So we're showing how successful you've been. And there's other success stories certainly on Patreon. How, you know, Jack or Natalie, how long has Patreon been around? Like you are one of the, Patreon is your product? Or are you one of the partners of Patreon, Jack?
Yeah, I'm the CEO and co-founder along with my co-founder, Sam. And we started the company about 14 months ago.
In the last 14 months, how many users do you have? Users meaning content providers.
We have over 30,000 creators. We have, let's see, in the last 14 months, we've sent them, as of this weekend, we'll have sent them over $3 million over the last,
wow,
over the last year since founding the company. So there's a lot of people that are now, you know, sustaining themselves from Patreon, which is really exciting.
Yeah. And so there's obviously some that do really well and some that probably don't do as well. What's the key to actually doing well on a site like yours or other sites? I mean, this is kind of I think I've heard it described as a Kickstarter for content creators, in that it helps you raise money. It's better, I think, obviously, because you can continue to raise money. You don't have to reach a certain goal, if I understand. Like, how does that model work? I mean, how does Patreon work?
Sure. So, I mean, it's for people like Pomplamoose. You know, we don't need $200,000 to make a record. We make records all the time. We don't need to spend money on a studio or, you know, and one of the things about Kickstarter is they don't let you put your time in on the budget as a line item. So you can't pay yourself for doing things. You have to use the money for a project. Whereas with Patreon, the goal is, hey, these are people paying you to make things. Mm-hmm. Use the money as you see fit to help you make more things. If that means hiring an accountant, great. If it means paying your PG&E bill so that you have lights, great. But the idea is, you know, Patreon is like a Kickstarter that never ends. Instead of giving $50 for that project so you can go make that movie, it's for people like Pomplamoose who are doing smaller things on a regular basis. You know, hey, I'm making 2 songs a month and I'd like $2,000 a song. Or what, you actually don't even set a limit. You just say, I'd like money to keep making things. And then your fans come and they pledge a certain amount to you per thing that you're releasing, whether it's a song or a video or a blog post or a comic or whatever it is. And then every time you release a thing, your fans' cards get charged. And then you get that money. So, you know, for instance, Pomplamoose is doing per music video. Every time we release a video, our patrons' cards are charged. I think we have about 1,500 patrons. And then we get money for making that video. And it helps us to make more videos that we can do this full time.
Mm-hmm. As a user, as a content creator, how much do I pay Patreon? Like, what kind of percentage? Because I know those kinds of sites vary and the types of ways that you can get your content out there. How much do you, what's your cut?
Yeah, Patreon takes a 5% cut, which I think is small.
Yeah, I think so.
And the investors that we have are on board with it, which I'm excited about. Not all investors are on board with a cut as small as 5%. And we put up, when we raised money, we heard from both camps and we put up a big fight to keep it small. And I'm really happy that we did, because now we have this small cut. And I think it's there for eternity now. So, but yeah, it was a battle with some folks. Some people said, you know, hey, this isn't going to work. It's too small a cut. And then we knew, okay, this isn't the right investor for us. You know, we want somebody who's on board with, you know, taking as little as we possibly can from creators. The whole goal of Patreon is to fund and empower the emerging creative class. And I think, you know, the last thing I want to do as an artist myself is like wedge. And I know this is what Patreon is and I struggle with it, but the last thing I want to do is be another company that's wedging themselves between fan and creator. Like the whole thing that I want to do with creators is just make the relationship as direct as possible between fan and creator. And really Patreon we view as like this entity that provides tools and payment services and analytics. And then Patreon gets the heck out of the way and it lets the creator talk with fans, you know, directly and fund fans directly. And we take a tiny percentage to make sure that we can, you know, continue on operating and you know, be a viable business.
You know, I link how do you, so the idea of getting people, so you have your platform on Patreon, you have your content there, but you still have to drive people to the site. You have to get people interested. And whether it's YouTube or you mentioned MySpace, old school, you still have to get people to pay attention and listen to your content or whatever it is. So I know, Natalie, you support, I think, from what I understand, most of your social media and you know, you try to drive people, I'm sure, to where your content exists. How important is like your link placement strategy on how you're getting people or driving people to a specific destination, and how are you doing it?
That's a really good question. I think we do a lot of, we do a lot of posting photos, on through Instagram and on our Facebook page. And we're big on putting links in the description of the photos. That tends to get quite a few clicks. Recently, we've started advertising on Facebook just a little bit to get the word out on our album and on the tour. And it's amazing, like, when you advertise, at least our experience so far has been like, if you put the link there and you give something, if you give someone something that looks attractive and clickable, that they, and you're advertising directly to your fans, not to like people who've never heard of you. It's funny, you shouldn't have to advertise to your fans. They've already liked you. They should just be informed that you're doing something, but you have to pay to advertise to them. But it still helps. Like it really helps. Like our ticket sales have definitely gone up since we started doing that. What else do we do for links?
Mostly, you know, I'd say most of our traffic comes from our YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. Everything else kind of pales in comparison. When we release a YouTube video, we get a big spike in everything, you mm-hmm. name it, iTunes sales, followers on Twitter, you know, it's just whatever. When we release a video, we get a giant spike across the board. Mm-hmm. So, we mostly link people to where we want to link them at the end of a video. We put a vlog that's just like this. We set up a camera, and Natalie and I talk to the camera, yep. and we ask people to buy our song. There is a vlog. There yeah. you go. We ask people to buy a song on iTunes, or you can see on the left there, it says, a cover of Come Together. That's a previous video. On the right, we have our new album on iTunes for people to pre-order. Mm-hmm. But using annotations at the end of a YouTube video is huge for us. We do that all the time. And I'd say that's, you know, telling people about something in a vlog at the end of a video, that's the best way to do it for us. It's just wherever your audience is. If yeah. your audience is on Facebook, do it on Facebook. If your audience is on YouTube, do it on YouTube.
So you started, I don't know how many episodes you have. I've seen a few. So the Pamplemousse Show, like how... Is that going to be like a continuous thing? Because I would agree with Jack that you can't tell the difference between Rice Krispies because they all taste the same. What?
They all taste the same.
Crispy rice is exactly Rice Krispies.
It is.
It's the same cereal.
I don't know that you actually revealed. Did you? I mean, there was a big X. Does that mean you neither one got it right?
Yeah. We both failed the taste test.
Jack won. He got cornflakes right, and I missed that one.
50-50. You give a monkey Rice Krispies and crispy rice.
They're not gonna know the difference.
Half the time they will.
I don't think half the time a monkey would know. I think those aren't correct
well,
facts.
Well, if you were running the test, you might be led to believe that half the monkeys knew which one was crispy rice and which one was Rice Krispies.
Well, and it was fun to watch you guys interact. And I'm guessing that the reason you decided to launch that show was fan engagement and get people to really connect with you. Because that kind of show is so different than actually creating music, but it's still a part of your feeling connected with the fans, building a relationship with them. Is that, am I right? I mean, what was the reason for starting something like that?
One of the things that we've come to realize in the, well, especially in the last year by observing other creators, mainly on YouTube, is that people who have a really, really strong connection with their fan base are the people who have the most longevity for their career. And it's not just about putting out whatever content it is that you enjoy making. It's also about investing in that relationship. And there are creators like Rhett and Link who do an amazing job of that. They put out a show every day and they have multiple projects. Jonathan Colton, we went on a cruise with him. A cruise. He takes his fans on a cruise every year and buys out a large part of this cruise. And he asked us to come on and play a show and hang out with the fans for a week. And it was incredible to see that there's a real, a much more genuine relationship than you would, than I would have expected. It's not like Jonathan Colton is this god up on this pedestal and his fans are like, oh, we love you so much. I mean, there's an element of praise and appreciation there, but it's so much more than that. It feels like this is just a thing that they all do together and they all really enjoy and appreciate each other. And it feels very reciprocal. So
I'm hearing, go ahead, Jack.
No, sorry, please go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, I'm hearing you say that the fan relationship and actually connecting to the fans is so important. It's not just about putting your content out there, which is why social media has been such a powerful tool. And I hate that term, but just this idea that you can connect with fans on the web, whether it's on like Twitter or Facebook, whatever, it's them feeling like the walls are broken down between you as an artist and them as a fan. And they feel like they know you, they feel like they have a relationship with you. And so they feel connected to your music. What's been the big so you mentioned MySpace. I have to keep bringing that up. But, you know, what's been the big learning lesson since your launch on MySpace and your journey to today where you're tomorrow launching album two? What have you learned that you really think you did right? And maybe what's something that you really wish, that was a learning lesson that maybe you didn't do right, but you've learned now not to do that?
Oof. So, gosh, so many things. I'll start with things that I think we could have done better while you think about some other things. Does that sound good?
Yeah, I was immediately things that we could have done better came to mind for me too. But yeah, go ahead. You start.
So the first thing is focus on what works. I feel like we lost focus on what was working because I think what was working for us was making videos that people loved and putting them out and making music that we were proud of and putting it out. And once that started working, we got into this zone of like, okay, it works. Now let's take over the world. And like, we just lost sight of what worked. And so we started talking with, okay, let's talk with managers in LA and maybe we'll do a label deal and maybe we'll do this and that. And then all, and you forget to then make videos. And like, it sounds silly, but it's easy to get wrapped up in this kind of let's take it to the next level mentality when actually there's like,
you struck gold.
Yeah. Like, that's gold. Yeah.
Going with it.
Yeah. So that was the first thing. The second thing is, being better business people and trusting people and adding people to the organization and removing people from the organization more quickly. Because when something isn't working, unfortunately, it's not working and you've got to stop. So I'm being very cloudy here. Let me be more direct. We were working with various people for too long and we should have not been working with them for that long. Various capacities, people helping the band. And it's just the kind of thing where, you know, it's like what I said earlier, you have to try a million things and then something works. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you've got to be very selective about who you work with, but not see Pomplamoose's problem was we were like too selective and then we'd hang on for a year or two. And then by then it's like, what are you doing? So you've got to be a better business person, help set up an organization, grow the team around you, grow people around you. If it's working, add people and, you know, and kind of have an operations. You need to be COO of your own company. You know, when you're a band, you have to think like a chief operations officer, you know, make sure everything is in place. And there's like a lot of operational duties that I think most people don't even realize. For instance, customer service. Okay, so you want to put up a product for sale. You want to sell a flash drive with all your music on it. Great, you do that, you get 300 orders. Now you have to fulfill 300 orders, get mailing addresses, people change their shipping info, they have questions. I live in Germany, it hasn't arrived yet, when's it coming? You'll get hundreds of customer service notes a day. Just the customer service notes was overwhelming for us. We still don't have a solution for it. All of our email goes completely unanswered. Which is a massive bummer. We just don't have the operational resources right now to deal with it because we're doing this album release and the tour. So we're kind of just doing our best. But having like head of operations for your company, if it's a person or you, somebody needs to head up operational proceedings. And that's something we never figured out. And I wish we had done better.
What resonated for you, Natalie? I mean, what was that the same thing you were thinking, or did something else pop to mind?
Definitely some of that. I'm just going to say that, yeah, that was pretty much all I had in mind.
Ditto. Okay. So I want to go to the evolution of music in general, in that, you know, it used to be that you would literally buy an album of a bunch of songs that were released at the same time. You guys have done a good job of putting teasers out there to the songs that you're releasing. You kind of created your own little social media promotion. You went onto Twitter. You created YouTube promotions. You did your own kind of Weird Al Yankovic, but different, where you started releasing music and getting people interested. And now the big day is tomorrow, right? So your new album is releasing. How important is it, though, to sell individual songs versus this big release of a new album? I mean, what do you think works better? Is it releasing songs and people buy individually, or bundling them together, which I know you've done as well?
We struggle with this because as artists, we appreciate albums and we like listening to albums. But we also realize that very few people, even our fans, will listen to it as an album. We spent all of this time like, okay, when should it fade into the next track? And it's just like, you're an idiot. Nobody's going to even listen to it fade into the next track. But we still did it because to us, it was important that it be a complete work of art. And just the feeling, I think, of putting out a complete product was important to us. We've actually put out two albums in the past, right? We've put out one was all covers and one was all originals, and then we had EPs and stuff. But every single album we've ever done has been us clumping 10 singles or 12 singles together into an album. Whereas with this, we actually tried to make something that felt like a cohesive work. And a lot of the songs that we put out on the way that we thought were going to be on the album, we got to the end and we're like, nope, doesn't feel right. Cause we had like 16 or 18 songs by the end of it. And we just had to choose the ones that we wanted to have on the album. And, there's this, I don't know, like when we were looking at modern albums, trying to get a sense of what people do nowadays and how long albums are. And it's so funny because pop albums are just like this torrential, like, like every single song, because you don't know which one's going to be a hit. And so like Beyonce's album is like 2 hours long and it's not about,
it's not meant to be listened to as an album. Yeah. It's not meant to be an album. Yeah.
Whereas this is actually meant to be listened to as an album, even though we realize that there's probably no point to that.
Well, go ahead, Jack.
Well, I was just going to reiterate Natalie said, you know, most people now buy singles, not albums. And that's just a fact. You know, most people buy singles, not albums. And we're aware of that. And yet we wanted to make an album. So there you go.
Well, and you're still kind of trying to figure out what works best. And you're trying things and you're trying a lot of things, as you put it, Jack. So, but you mentioned Beyonce. And I want to talk about that real quick for a second before I know we're going to run out of time with you. But Single Ladies hit just as you came up with your own parody of Single Ladies. You had last I checked, certainly over 10 million. It looks like 10,251,265, unless there have been a few more in the last hour, people who have viewed this song. What would you say that was important in getting you recognized? What part did that play in getting people to pay attention to the content you're creating?
It was pivotal. It was a game changer for us. I mean, we had 10,000 YouTube subscribers before that. And it took us a couple of years to get those 10,000. And it felt like a big deal that we had 10,000 subscribers, because back in the day, it really was a big deal. And then we put out our first pop cover, which happened to be Single Ladies, which happened to be right when Kanye made a fool of himself. And everybody was making all of these covers of it and dancing babies. And suddenly our fan base quintupled, and then just started growing. And that was really our peak. In fact, we recently, what's that site where you can see your
Google Trends?
Google Trends.
Yeah.
We were looking at ourselves and we have this.
Don't do a Google Trend search of Pompamous. It's just depressing.
Well, we had to take a break from Pamplemousse,
yeah.
For family reasons and stuff. So we had this huge peak, and you know, ideally you would keep putting stuff out there, but instead we actually had to take a break from the band. But anyhow, it's really funny because you put in Beyonce and you put in Pamplemousse, and of course, like, Beyonce is like way up here, and we're like way down here, and but there's this one like really huge peak that happens, and we like kind of meet up with Beyonce right on her line. And of course she goes way up after that. But it was like, it like put it into perspective. It was like, oh my goodness, that was a huge peak.
It was a big peak. Yeah. You know, I think that video, so I do want to dispel the myth that it takes a viral video to launch your career. I think Rhett and Link are a great example of someone whose career has just like gone like this. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not any one single, like, you know, they have a lot of videos that have millions and millions of views, but you know, Lindsay Sterling has crystallized and that launched her career, and there's no doubt about that. But there are a lot of creators who just put out great videos on a regular basis. They get 500,000 views or 100,000 views, and mm-hmm. they keep putting them out and their careers just keep climbing. And so I think it's important that, you know, you're not aiming for that viral smash sensation. It's more like, you know, put out a lot of good stuff all the time so that your fans have stuff to look forward to. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a big fan. I think we all here. We, in fact, Leo has extended an offer for you guys to come out. I tried to get you to come out tonight, but I know that was the timing was off. So we want to have you come back. I know Leo would like to have you here in the studio performing. So
yeah, we'd love it.
We would really love to. Yeah.
Your music is tomorrow. If somebody wants to download it, follow you on iTunes, whatever, what's the best way they can catch your new music?
You can go on to iTunes and look for Season 2. That's the name of our album. It's easier to remember. Season 2 is easier to remember than our band name, Pamplemousse, which is French for grapefruit. you can go to our website otherwise. Twitter, we're on Instagram, we just started a Vine, so we're kind of all over the place. If you look for us, you will find us.
You will be found, and your name is very unique, so I'm not sure that would be a problem. Thanks guys for joining, and good luck with your appointment later, and good luck with tomorrow. I'll be following.
Thank you so much for having us.
Absolutely.
Bye.
That was Pamplemousse, everybody. We are big fans here at the Brick House. I certainly am. And I want to talk more about just this idea of the platforms that you're going to use, or whether it's YouTube or other platforms like Patreon, or there's other sites out there. And there are people that can help you promote your content, whether you're an author, maybe you create business content for your business, or maybe you're a musician. Before we do that, I actually want to thank one of our sponsors today, which is Hover. And I have to say, so when you have a great idea, you want to secure the domain name for it, right? I mean, I own several domain names. I own too many probably, and not all of them they use, but it's a good idea to save them. And you want it something catchy, memorable to represent your online identity. Hover gives you exactly what you need to get the job done. You find the perfect domain name for your idea so you can get started and working on it. Right now, Hover is having a sale on all domain extensions through September 1st. This sale is for new and existing customers. Summer is the perfect time to start a new project. Every single domain is deeply discounted, so you can choose whatever you'd like. .club, .ninja, .guru, .just about anything. So all kinds of people love Hover, and myself included. Geeks, developers, designers, programmers love Hover because they know they'll get the best tools and support. But you don't have to be an expert to get a domain. The service is simple and easy to use. It takes the hassle out of the friction of registering a domain. It gives you easy, powerful tools to manage your domain so that anyone can do it. You can get the perfect domain name and start building your web presence right away. It's so easy. All you do is search a few keywords, and Hover will show you the best available options and suggestions. Hover is a clean and simple website. It's less than 5 minutes. You can find a domain name you want and get it up and running. Valet Transfer Service, I want to talk about, to make the process completely easy. It's called Valet Transfer Service. For free, Hover will take care of the entire process for you and let you know when your domains are settled in your Hover account. They'll transfer your DNS settings no matter how many domains you have, and it's at no additional cost. Hover is honest. They don't believe in heavy-handed upselling. They include everything you need with your domain, no more, no less. They also include custom email. You'll get smart control panels so you can do what you want with your domain. Plus, who is privacy included for free on every domain that supports it. If you ever need it, Hover has the best customer service support around. It's known for its no wait, no hold, no transfer phone service. When you call, a real person is ready to help. Hover now offers volume discounts. They'll give you a discount on your domain renewal starting in just 10 domains, then going up in value from there. The idea is that the more domains you have in your account, the less you have to pay to renew them. So visit Hover today and register your domain name. It's 10% off your first purchase. Take advantage of their summer sale. Go to hover.com, that's hover.com, and use promo code MM7. We thank Hover for their support of Marketing Mavericks. So thank you so much, and we appreciate their support. So super glad. We have some more guests joining us now to talk more about the idea of how to, you know, use YouTube, social media, and so much more. Our guests are coming up here. We've got Chad Johnson. He is our, hey, there he is. OMG Chad.
Hey, how you doing, Tanya?
Good, good.
Awesome.
We've got Lynette Young, who is the content marketing manager at AWeber. Well, welcome, Lynette.
Great to be back. Thank you.
We've also got Daryl Eves, who is a video marketing strategist, joining us as well. Welcome, Daryl.
How you doing, Tanya?
And Amy Schmidt. I knew I was going to do this. Is it Schmidtauer? How do you say that?
Schmidtauer.
See, I just should have gone with my gut instinct there. And you're the president of Vlog Boss Studios, right?
That's right.
Welcome, everybody, for joining us for the show, for the second half of the show. So, you know, this is a still very complicated space. I know, Chad, you and I talk about this a lot from the standpoint of how to actually create content and get people to notice your content, monetize the content, and so much more. So let's start with you, Chad. I mean, this is something that you talk a lot about, and you're both not just a Twit star, but you're also a YouTube star. How do you? You're welcome. And so where does somebody get started? I mean, they want to create content, and they start somewhere. Let's say that's YouTube. How do they monetize that? How are you monetizing your content?
Well, monetizing through YouTube, YouTube has made it very simple in recent years. It used to be kind of a complicated process where you'd have to get approved, and you almost had a real human being look at your account. In many cases, it was a real human being would look over your account, make sure that everything was fine before you were approved for monetization. But in the recent years, they've brought down almost all of those barriers. And so you can start to monetize your content almost immediately from creating a YouTube account. So that's how I would suggest if anyone really wants to start monetizing, if we're talking specifically about YouTube content, is just make sure that you fill out the forms. There's a few things you need to do, like verify your account, probably give them a phone number, and then you can start monetizing. There's another AdSense level to that. Once you can start monetizing before you really even have a way to capture that money. YouTube monetization works in sort of two forms. One is on YouTube side, where you're monetizing the YouTube videos, and then others on the AdSense side where that monetization kind of flows into your AdSense account. And so you can actually start monetizing your videos even before you have an AdSense account, which has made it very convenient for new people starting off on YouTube.
This is such an intimidating space. And I mentioned that you've got several shows here on the Twit Network. One of them is something that is a very crossover for YouTube, which is Minecraft. So the show that you have here on Twit is one of the many shows.
Is OMG Craft.
OMG Craft. How does that translate over to your YouTube brand for the same product?
It does amazingly. It's actually kind of interesting to see. When we made OMG Craft, one of the goals was to make a show that was unlike anything Twit had ever made before, is to really reach out into an area that we hadn't before. And it was kind of geared towards a new YouTube audience. And I spent tons of time making sure that the channel is something that is approachable to a YouTube audience. And so we've seen, I believe now I don't actually have current numbers for our podcast, but I believe that we're about 2 to 1 in terms of 2 YouTube views for every 1 podcast view that we get on most of our shows. And that was not how it was 7 months ago. So we've actually seen the show OMG Craft, which was geared much more towards the YouTube audience, achieve that, which was really, really exciting for us. Yeah, and I can kind of speak to that as well. This is a marketing show. So how did we market ourselves and change our content a little bit to focus more on YouTube? And one is people on YouTube want to get in, watch the video, and get out. They don't like a ton of fluff. They also don't want 7 topics in one thing, unless if it's some sort of list where it's all a general topic anyway. You're listing 7 best phones or something like that. So really your one content is phone. I found that trying to mix too many types of content into one type of video it doesn't work. And so instead of doing an hour long Minecraft show, which we actually did do before, now we just focus on one topic and we cover it very, very well. So you can see, Minesweeper mini game in Minecraft. And we are showing off one map. We could easily do a show where we show off 3 maps an episode, but it doesn't work for SEO. It doesn't work for the type of audience who really wants to jump in, see the thing, and then move on to the next thing. And so we found that that worked out really well. And we also found that that really would help, the SEO would really help move the channel along in general. And if one of those very simple videos became very popular, it would help move the entire channel forward, almost like the engine to the train of the rest of the channel. It was the engine that was pushing the rest of the channel forward, and the rest of the videos were kind of the other train cars for that metaphor.
So, you know, when it comes to, you know, you obviously have a brand that you've developed here on the Twit Network, and you're really popular, and I'm a fan. But not everybody has that opportunity to be on Twit or another network. And so there is potentially a small business or somebody who's just getting started, maybe Pomplamoose, who they, when they started, they went to, you know, they talked about MySpace, and they do have done a lot of other things. And as they even said, we just, you know, it's like spray and pray, right? They just put a whole bunch of stuff out there to see what works, which isn't really the best strategy. It's obviously many things have worked for them, including the Beyonce recognition. But that doesn't work. Spray and pray does not work for everybody. And I don't really recommend that people do that necessarily.
And Tanya, I would completely disagree with that, the spray and pray. Realistically, there are people out there right now that want to view your content, and it's building that audience, you know, going and finding where they congregate and putting yourself in that community and leaving comments and getting more involved. You know, a lot's changed since YouTube started. It was really easy to get views and get an audience early on in 2007, 2008. But then the influx of all the different creators and content creators coming onto YouTube, it makes it more and more difficult. I mean, they're uploading a ton of videos every second, and, you know, it makes more difficult. So a strategy that I always work with my clients is, let's figure out where your audience or your target audience congregates off of YouTube, see where they're at, and see if we can start building momentum. And what's been working really well for us is Facebook.
And they talked about Facebook ads, which I, you know, that's a whole nother controversial topic. And Lynette, I know you have worked with a variety of clients in the space, as well as you, Amy.
Yeah.
And I just think spray and pray sounds like putting a lot of energy in a lot of different places. What do you gals say? I mean, do you advise that your clients actually just try everything, or do you have them focus on something specific and they grow from there?
I would just say that I absolutely say focus on something specific. You can spray and pray, but even at that point, if something begins to work and you're too busy focused on all the other pieces of pasta up against the wall, you may not actually see what direction you need to stick with and fine tune. It takes a lot of research and really trying and understanding how a platform works and how people communicate on it, so you can actually make sure that this is the right place for you. This is how to get it done, and it's going to end up paying you back in the end. I definitely think that this is just a sign of creative people having a really hard time being business people, and they need to be more strategic about how they're marketing themselves.
I think that's a really difficult thing sometimes for artists to figure out. They're not marketers, right? So you're doing whatever it is that you're making your widget, or you're doing whatever it is that you're right. great at, and you're not necessarily a marketer, so you don't really know how to get your product out there. You know, Amy, you did something. We talked about Pomplamoose and their Beyonce coincidence happening that really got them a lot of recognition. You did something that actually I noticed and didn't make that connection until we started preparing for the show. And I'm like, wait, I remember seeing this video of her. And that was, so we have a mutual friend, Gary Vaynerchuk, who came out with a book. And you did something really creative as far as a reference to his book, giving a referral to his book, saying that you wanted his book. You sang a song, which was very brave of you, by the way. By the way, but kind of unique.
I was definitely in the holiday spirit. I don't know where it came from. I was just in the car singing. You know, I had told Gary, I was like, I'm so excited about your book, you know, and I told him I was going to review it. And it just seemed so much like a cop out, like, oh, I'm just going to talk about his book on my video. And I'm like, couldn't I do something a little bit more fun? And I didn't really think that far into it. Anyway, I came up to words with that song, and it just ended up in GarageBand, and I ended up dancing in my chair with the camera on, and that's really it. A lot of people actually ask me, like, how heavy a hand he had in it. He had no clue, and I almost didn't press publish, which I usually preach, like, don't be afraid to press publish, and I was just like, am I really doing this right now? I can't hand it.
How important was that, though? I mean, how important was having something that you did very spontaneously, very creatively? I think creativity is really key here. You did something really creative that was different than the mainstream, and so it got noticed, and that actually got you a lot of additional attention. I mean, did that result in, you know, new speaking engagements, new clients? I mean, what was the ROI on that bit of creativity?
So here's where these two worlds kind of come together, right? Like I'm in two different spaces. I'm very much in the marketing and business world, but I'm also very heavily in the YouTube world. And the reason why I was able to make a difference for myself in being a social media video content marketing specialist was by using video with the true cadence that is YouTube. You know, you don't see very many video marketers doing a music video and doing it really well. Not that I'm saying I did it really well, but by not trying too hard and just saying like, listen, whatever prestige level I have for my business, let's just kick it to the side for a second and have some fun. That's the whole reason why YouTube works, is cat videos and people just making a fool. So it was less about trying to get Gary to share my video because I knew he was going to like it. I don't care if he shares it or not. I want him to be happy with it and say like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. That's cool. But for me, it was further proving that I can step up my game in continuing to keep I'll use the word again, cadence of YouTube is with my content. You know, it was something I'd never done before. I'd already kind of set the bar in the way that I deliver my message on a regular basis. And people genuinely have a good time watching my content. I have tons of viewers who have no desire to start a business or market a brand or even start a YouTube channel. They just watch because they have a good time and they have an educational experience at the same time. That was just my way of continuing to offer that up to my audience. It was very important for me. I've definitely gotten clients from that video because of a specific target that follows Gary. They followed me from that, and that was fantastic. Speaking gigs, clients, the whole gamut. But the biggest thing for me was continuing to step up my game with my YouTube videos because that's going to help me in the long run.
Okay, let's talk about YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I know, Chad, this is kind of a thorn in your side. I don't know, but it's certainly an issue with you that you don't really make, okay, at least not very many people make a lot of money on YouTube, but it's right. A great place to put your content to get recognized. Although there's other platforms and other places, and as you mentioned, Pomplamoose mentioned, they've even used somebody that's now acting as their publisher, if you will, somebody that's going to help them promote content off of YouTube. So I don't know, Lynette, jump in, Daryl, certainly, but I would say the first thing that you need to have is passion about whatever it is that you're doing, your job, the content you're creating. What's step two? What do you need to do to get started? Should you start on YouTube? I mean, is MySpace still relevant? Or
no, please don't even go there. Let me take this.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things that I think comes out across everything is that the people that the content creators that make it big or that have success in whatever that level is on YouTube, they are a natural fit for that medium of video. I've seen a lot of people, YouTube's hot and we're going to get out there and we've got great content or great ideas or great songs. But I've seen, you know, they're not great in front of a camera. They're not great having a vlogging type platform. I think Amy does really well because she's very comfortable in front of a camera where, you know, maybe she, you know, I'm not going to speak for you, but, you know, people sometimes are really good in front of a camera and can have that rapport with people that they're not really seeing behind the magic box on the other side of YouTube. But they can't make it work in other formats like short form text or, just maybe blogging or something more like a formal type structure like a LinkedIn or something like that, that those platforms don't work well for them where YouTube or video does. So I think that that's really important too, to take a look at the idea of not having everything stick at once is really important. And I'm sure that everyone here would agree video is the most labor and time intensive piece of the content production that there is. It's much easier to just type something on your phone or type something on a keyboard and get going from there. So when you put the investment in to do YouTube or video on the web, I think a lot of people fall short of it because there's too much production, even, editing video or doing it live or what have you, setups and videos and lights and things like that. It just makes it really difficult to get started. So I think that there's a lot of people that shy away from it that might be really good on camera because it's a little scary.
So you're suggesting, if I'm hearing you correctly, that you should go to YouTube and create content. So what are the basic parameters? Is it, I've been in marketing for a long time. That's my background is marketing prior to being in radio and now being a part of this wonderful family here at Twit. And, you know, I think, for me getting started, even in radio, I mean, I was just passionate about this idea that people were now using social media to connect with fans. And I started a radio show and I was just excited about it. So that was my passion, right? But then I had to learn, you know, how to finesse what I was doing. And I know, Amy, you've talked a lot about that as far as getting people started and getting them to listen to their content. I think that's something that even today I have a hard time sometimes listening to myself without cringing about what I'm doing, because you just want to be better. So what is your advice to somebody who needs to get started? What kind of marketing plan should they develop when it comes to content creation? And does that depend on the different type of business?
It really does depend. It depends on the business and the brand. But what I always tell people is, if you really think video is going to be important for your marketing strategy, then maybe try it out first before you upload to like your video landing page about me, where it's going to be the most critical thing that might get you conversions. There's something that is very popular on YouTube called VEDA, which is Vlog Every Day in April and August. So beginning on August 1st, like in my YouTube channel is Savvy Sexy Social. And we do this every April and August, where we have our own little chapter of this effort where it's like, listen, if you think this is in your future for your brand and you really need to get used to talking to a camera, why don't you do it when it's more of a practice round, while there's a community continually helping you and encouraging you. And meanwhile, you can encourage them and sort of maybe build your first little video audience by doing VEDA. Just talk to a camera every day. It'll get really easy after a while when you're not worried about, okay, I just have to make a video today. Let's just get it done. And all of a sudden the personality just comes out. It might take you more time than others, but by practicing, you're just going to get better. It's always going to get better. And I think people have such a hard time realizing that because they wait to press record for the first time. And when you do that, you're just putting off the inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I would also say that a lot of people don't want to start making videos, or they don't want to start until either they have the right equipment, or until they're good enough, or until it looks perfect, and until they've made that intro, until, you know, they have blank, blank, blank. It doesn't matter. They'll come up with almost any excuse to put off making that first video. And advice that I give all the time, and I love to give this advice, is that you have to be bad before you're good. And so if you're just starting, if you're on your first or second step and getting into this, into, you know, YouTube or basically whatever you want, remember that you have to be bad, and when you start off, you're going to be bad. So just kind of realize that that's going to happen. And then also whenever, you know, things will grow. So if don't get discouraged when only there's 6 views or 3 views, because you might still be in that bad process, which you will become better over time. And also the next step after that is, I would say, to find the community that is around whatever you've decided your niche is. And I think you should also find a niche. But let's say it's just, even if it's a very wide niche, like vlogging, try to find a community around that and make friends. Just friends, because,
you know, those
connections are going to do so well for you. Go ahead.
You know, also, sometimes you have to create your own niche. And let me just show you a good example. I worked with a couple great clients, one of which is the Piano Guys. I don't know if you've checked them out. You can go on there. They have over 3 million subscribers. Super talented. And they really suck people into their videos. But yet you'll find people that really need help. And ultimately, you have to create an audience. And that audience needs to be somewhere. And so I recently have a new client. They're called the Redhead Express. And we're actually, our strategy is actually building an audience before we even really get involved with YouTube. So we just, did one video on YouTube. And now we're actually going, you can go there to facebook.com/Redhead Express. And we've been able to grow that from about 18,000 likes up to, I think it's like 55,000 likes there. And the great thing, too, about this is as we're building the momentum, you can see tomorrow we're releasing a video on the 29th for Happy. And we're also making money. So if you click on that first link right there, we're actually selling merchandise. We're seeing what merchandise actually works before we actually, you know, buy it or whatever. And if you scroll down to the bottom, you can see that we already sold over 1,000 of those. And so it's actually generating money for us to make videos so that we can actually take this audience that's interested in redheads and, you know, we can convert them over to subscribers.
So, but how are you, you've obviously decided to go out there and test something, but not everybody has the time to do that. Not everybody has an unlimited amount of resource and time to, and even you heard Pomplamoose in the first part of the show talk about how they got distracted. Now you're a marketer, so you're helping them do this, but so right. Is the strategy then to hire a marketer to help you or?
No, I think it's strategic partnerships. I mean, you have a couple elements. In music, for example, you need to have a good voice. You need to be able to perform very well. But the videography needs to be good. If you don't do that good, do the best you can and look for people to partner. There's a lot of people that will collaborate and kind of work together. And that's kind of how the piano guys come together is they had little bits and pieces. And over the course of a few months, they're like, hey, we could do this. We can actually make a living at this. And they actually all came together, a videographer, a sound guy, and musicians. And now the four of them are really, you know, they're on tour right now in Mexico. So if you don't have some components, look for opportunities. There's people out there that are really good at what they do and just do a strategic partnership with them. Maybe they can be someone that can help you take you to the next level.
So I want to talk more about that. I also want to talk about some of the other ways that we get people to pay attention to our content besides getting a marketer help us, like literally maybe a link placement strategy using other communities and followers. Before I do that, I want to thank one of our other sponsors for the show, which is NatureBox. We love to thank NatureBox, and I'm a big fan of the NatureBox. Helps me get through the day. I'm not going to joke about that. I'm going to say something that's going to surprise you. Probably, maybe not, if you know me that well. But you should snack more. I mean, I've heard this for a long time. Eating little snacks throughout the day is actually a great thing. Nothing big, maybe something the size of your fist, which actually is what NatureBox provides. And they have really great tasting snacks. So it's, you know, very taste, whether you're a savory person or a sweet person. They've got, I'm a big fan of cherries and cranberries and berries. They've got really interesting savory options as well. You can even focus on your dietary needs. So if you're vegan or soy free or gluten conscious or lactose free or nut free or non-GMO, tons and tons of options. And I've had lots of friends who actually have NatureBox delivered to their home because they think it's a great option for their kids and their family. They come in a resealable package. It's so easy to just pull those out versus something else that you could potentially pull out, especially when you're hungry. Because when you're hungry, you just, you know, let's face it, you kind of break down the judgment wall. And if you have healthy options there, you're going to eat the healthy options. So I would say definitely think about ordering NatureBox. They make it so easy. You can snack guilt-free with coconut date energy bites, Santa Fe corn sticks, pear praline crunch, and over 100 more healthy choices. So here's the deal. To get 50% off of your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit and stay full, stay strong. Go to naturebox.com/twit. And we thank NatureBox for their support of Marketing Mavericks. Thank you so much. I am a big, big fan. And I have NatureBox at work. I have NatureBox at my desk. And I eat NatureBox in our lunchroom. And I have NatureBox at home. So, big fan.
That PB&J granola is thebomb.com. I'm just saying. Like, I'm completely obsessed. It's really good that they portion it out because I would eat a lot more than they give you.
Well, and there's a lot of unhealthy options out there. So, it's good that there's some good ones. Yeah.
I get them, and then I honestly have never tried it because my kids grab it and they're gone before I walk in the house.
Not going to happen.
Yeah. That's what happens when you have kids. Don't have children. This should be a really good public service.
I'm feeding them. They keep wanting to eat all the time. I don't understand. Every day.
Chad, does your cat eat your snacks? Because I see a little kitty in the background.
She's not allowed. But she does have her own kitty snacks. NatureBox should do a spinoff called Kitty Snacks. And she would totally. Right now, she's just asleep. She's just done.
You're such a marketer. So cute. So we're talking about YouTube, and I remember when YouTube first started, sadly, but I do. I remember that being a really cool, great thing. It's very interesting, and over the years, they've certainly got better about helping people understand how to use YouTube. So is YouTube really user friendly? Is it that easy to just post content, understand the analytics, which I'm a marketer, so I like looking at the data, the analytics, what, you know, is it easy to see what's working well and to manage that as a user for somebody who maybe isn't a marketer and they don't really know a lot about marketing?
You know, it is getting more and more complicated, it seems, because they change everything all the time. It's like one day you do it this way, the next day you do it that way. I actually saw a need for that, so I actually started my own YouTube channel, and it's to give people YouTube tips. And I was able, in a short amount of time, since January 2013, I was able to get 50,000 subscribers, which is great. And it's all the whole purpose of this channel is to give people YouTube tips because everything changes. And what's the most frustrating for me, to be honest with you, is when you actually do a tip and then YouTube changes it the next week and you have to do another one. I know it's kind of job security, but still it's a little frustrating because people are getting frustrated right now.
So what about other sites? Like we talked about Patreon earlier and there are other sites that you can go to place your content, Vimeo. I mean, there's other things you can do. You don't have to. YouTube doesn't have the monopoly exactly on the market. So where should you go to place content? I mean, some people place content straight on Facebook and they only put their content on Facebook. Is that a good idea? Should you, I don't know, Lynette, should you have your own blog, vlog, if you will, Amy? What do you guys think?
I think that owning your own content in some capacity is vital. I'm not a huge fan of putting content straight up on Facebook. It's funny because even though YouTube isn't a paid channel, I figured that's kind of owned. I'm a huge fan of Vimeo, actually, because if you know use a paid subscription to that, it's kind of like owning your own content. As a MarTech professional, specifically working with companies or now AWeber because I'm there full time, I like different platforms for different reasons. YouTube, it's the exposure, it's the community. So if I have someone that I'm working with that's what they're looking for, YouTube is always my go-to place for that, right? But there are other uses. I mean, Vimeo, you can have protected content and things like that. So, you know, in some corporate environments, that's a really good choice as well, too. I find Vimeo a little bit harder to grow a community in, to be honest with you. I find it really good for more longer form artistic pieces of content, like short form movies or documentaries and things like that. I don't find that it really works well for a lot of the same types of content that work well on YouTube. I don't see Vimeo as like a vlogging platform, although it does exist out there. I just think that video is not video and streaming video isn't streaming video, that each one has its own purpose. So a lot of it is like once you're comfortable in front of the camera and figure out what you want to do with it, you really have to do a little bit of research and figure out where it should live. But honestly, I would never just put a video up on Facebook and leave it there. I think Facebook has other strengths and video is not one of them.
So here's my thinking, too, about Pomplamoose talking about advertising on Facebook. I'm already a fan, right? So I'm already paying attention to their tweets, to their YouTube, and I'm checking it out. And I think there's ways to communicate with your fans on Facebook without necessarily promoted ads. Because I'm seeing all their ads because I follow them and I'm listening to their music. I see lots and lots of ads for them. Are we still seeing an ROI on, or are we seeing it? Have we ever really seen a strong ROI on Facebook advertising? I mean, they're spending money to tell me about their music, but I already know. Is that really a wise use of their marketing budget?
You know, Tanya, I think what it comes back down to is you can do a lot with retargeting and remarketing. And so when somebody actually likes you on Facebook, you can actually find similar people that might like you. And that can actually show up in the news feed and you can grow your audience from there. And you can actually do a lot of strategies if someone's seen a specific video and you want to retarget, remarket them using, AdWords for video. It's a very powerful way to build it. And I truly believe, and I've seen the numbers on the clients that we deal with, a huge ROI. And we're able to calculate, you know, how many dollars it's going to take to get some subscribers that would translate into money, because we're all trying to make money at this. And it's very powerful if you know what you're doing in the sense of using targeting, retargeting and remarketing to really further your cause and to get similar people to like your page or your video.
So I have a girlfriend who is an artist. She just came out with some music and she's doing really great with her music, but she's not a marketer. And she's hired people to help her. And I think we all look for people to help us. And as marketers, you probably want to help people. But I don't know that everyone really gets how to promote. And we all have a lot to learn. But not everybody really knows how to use every single aspect of marketing online well for every single type of business. It feels like such a broad space and we're all trying to do so many different things. What's your advice to people who are trying to find the right marketer for their type of content?
Who's going to take this
Lynette?
One?
Lynette. I know. Chad's like, mouth, I'm right? One. Chad, you're somebody that's looking. But Lynette, you've been doing this for years. Yeah. And Amy, I know you and Daryl as well.
I'm not that old, I promise.
I am.
You've been doing it for months.
I am. I am way older.
Amy's been doing it for months. I know. So Lynette, what would your advice be?
You know what? I think that a lot of it goes back to, you know, finding someone that is in a vertical space as what you're doing or what you want to do and look for who's helping them or reach out and become part of that community. I mean, Daryl was saying before that, you know, that's the first thing he goes and does before he even starts hardcore promoting a client is develop the community around them. And that's where you're going to hear it when you have your ear to the ground. I think there are a lot of ways. I mean, to be honest, I see a lot of people and they Google into YouTube and say like, I need, you know, promotion help on this, promotion help on that, whatever. If you need help, there's probably a YouTube video out there. I'll just say that. But there's a lot of tactics that you can use that are, that you could just focus on one. Like we were talking about Facebook before. I'm a huge fan of lookalike audiences and things like that. But if you don't have to try everything, you just have to find one or two and try it and see what's going to work. But I think emulating other people in your industry or other people in that have the same types of audiences that you're chasing, like book authors, for example, if you're a sci-fi author, chances are people that read, you know, your type of book that you write, there's another audience. They're going to like that. They're not just going to pick one author and stick with that and never read another author. So if you can go around and look, it's not really like you're, in my opinion, poaching anything. You're just learning from their communities and learning to see what works. And when you start paying attention to advertising, I think you're going to realize how effective it is on you as a person or how ineffective it is on you. With the whole idea of retargeting and stuff, I'll talk to other people and they're like, you know, ever since I visited that girl's website, it's like she's everywhere now. And I was like, yeah, it's retargeting, but they don't know what it is. But all of a sudden they're like, it's top of mind. Like Tanya, you were saying before, the Pompalouse doesn't have to, like, you already know about them, but would you think about them every day if they weren't retargeting to you and marketing to you to stay top of mind? You don't. You go on to something else in your life or somebody else's ad is in that place. And then all of a sudden you're a fan of somebody else's music and you spend your $15 on their iTunes album versus the first one. So, you know, you do have to fight to keep the audiences that you've already earned. And that's kind of the kicker of this whole thing. You have to do that plus try to find new people. But finding the same audiences, the same viewers, the same people that appreciate that type of content and just seeing what works for them, or, you know, in some cases just flat out ask them, how did you find out? How do you stay in touch? You know, what do you like about them? How do you find their videos when they come out that they're new? Do you subscribe? Do you use email? You know, what's the deal? Ask questions. No one says that's not allowed.
It's so funny that you say that because whenever I talk about retargeting or contextual targeting, I think of overstock.com because I cannot go to a website where they're not trying to sell me a sofa that I've been looking
at. But it's the sofa that you need. It's exactly the sofa that you want.
They're so good. And I'm going to buy one because of them. I'm sure I'm going to get it from them. But they're good at it. And I would agree with you, Lynette, that contextual targeting is really good. And it is something that as marketers, we know more about than probably the average user. So I want to talk about when you create content, some of the legal components of that. And I think, Chad, maybe you can even speak to this, but like licensing, for example, and, you know, worrying about somebody stealing your content, the content you put out there. I know, Amy, you've talked about not wanting people to take your content and reuse that. Chad, I mean, you create a lot of original content. How do you prevent people from stealing your content? And how do you protect yourself from some copyright issues?
That's a good question. For me, my content is so personal that it would be almost absurd for someone to take it. Well, with OMG Craft and maybe the podcast, that would be a different case. But for something that I'm doing on my own personal YouTube channel, I don't think anyone's going to steal my own vlogs and then republish them or reuse them in any way. So I get around it that way. But I've definitely had this issue with people who even write comics and do art illustration. There's not a very good system. There's not a very good legal system that is going to be inexpensive for people to make claims against other people. There is a good when it comes to many, you know, a ton of different types of content. On YouTube, you can sign up. Once I believe you're large enough, you can sign up for it's content ID matching, and you yourself can be can see where other people are re-uploading your content. So I would look into that content ID claim system inside of YouTube. And so that's one way that you can avoid it. And then I guess the other way that I would say is make your content so personal that no one would even try. It's difficult because people do gravitate towards really well-produced content. That's difficult. There's also different views, trains of thought on sharing content. As long as you do something like maybe a watermark below your video or something like that, people will always be able to fall back to wherever it was originally created if you do a watermark on all of your videos. And so some people aren't adverse to copying and sharing at all. In fact, they enjoy it. Please, you know, put this up, allow people to torrent it. Wherever you can share it absolutely is helpful to the channel. And so it's just a few different ways of thinking about it.
So when I look at even like, you know, written content, one of my favorite bloggers is Scott Monty, who posts some really, he may have a strategy and a plan on how he has an editorial plan on how he does it. And I do think, Amy, I've heard you talk about having an editorial plan. And as a marketer, I think that's incredibly important for a marketing strategy to have some sort of plan. But I also think you have to worry about other people stealing your copy and reposting it. Sadly, people do that. So how do you advise your clients, any of you, to track the content and make sure that people aren't plagiarizing? Lynette?
I'm going to go to Lynette. Default answer person. I was just thinking that there are a couple services that you can use. I'm a fan of, most stuff that I've seen is either maliciously taken by someone trying to impersonate or lift traffic from, or it's just site scrapers. And I fix that real easy with, how we configure RSS feeds, because it's generally how the scrapers get in there. But there are tactics to it, and there are ways that you can register your content immediately. Also, I should mention that Google authorship is really big for that, because you'll be the first one to have the content out on online with attribution to you to it. So that helps a lot as well. I have not had anybody yet had to follow through any recourse with that, with content that they've had lifted that, had the wrong attribution to it or anything. But something that I want to say is, if you have a community that's built up around you, they will protect you fierce. Yes. There's a woman I know online, Erica, she goes by Redhead Writing online, and her stuff gets, right? So Erica's stuff gets ripped off every once in a while. Her fans and her followers come down like the plague on the people that steal her stuff. I mean, it's like the wrath of God. You really don't want to mess with it. But when you have a strong community, they will look out for you. And a lot of times I've seen your following and your fans find stuff that you could never even find with a paid service or with a script, because they will sniff it out and they can tell her writing anywhere, even if they strip off her name. So I have to say that depending on what you're coming at this for, sometimes they're your best allies.
So you know what, if you guys don't know who she is, so Erica Napolitano is at Redhead Writing on Twitter. She's pretty feisty, and she doesn't always have a family friendly blog post. So to copy her is to like really be a little scary about what you're putting out there. But she's a super smart gal, and I've interviewed her many times fan and a friend of hers. But you know, I do worry about that. And I see other people actually put embedded links into their content. So I think there's ways to do it. You know, I know there's so much more in this space that we can talk about from, you know, the different sites. So I have, you know, a couple more questions. And I think one of them is, I know, Chad, you and I have talked about the difference between so for somebody who hasn't used these sites or is still trying to understand, you've got a platform like YouTube, which doesn't necessarily generate a lot of revenue, but is huge and obviously a great place to get noticed. You've got another platform, which is like a Kickstarter for content like Patreon. And then you've got something like Rumble, who helps you put, you know, a variety of different content out there. Explain the differences between those three types or any other types of content, places. Revenue creators, if you will, Ryan.
Perfect, yeah. So YouTube AdSense is a great service. Absolutely adore that was brought in. Like a lot of people have said, it's a little bit difficult to make a good, steady revenue income from YouTube AdSense. In fact, my argument lately has been, I think the only content that really makes a good amount of AdSense revenue is gaming content, because you can put out 5 videos a day, which could have pre-roll, mid-roll, post-roll. And then also you're just going to hopefully have a consistent audience of, if you get large into the, say, 200,000, you know, subs area, then you'll have a consistent audience of 20,000 viewers per video, basically no matter what video you put out. But that can be difficult. If that's not the type of content you're into, then that's not where your audience lies. So that's one revenue creator. Another would be something like Patreon, where you could have a smaller audience, or your videos could come out less frequently. Let's say you only do a weekly vlog, and that's the only thing that's what your audience identifies with, and you just don't have the capacity to make more videos a week, then something like Patreon could work really well. There's, of course, all the other traditional forms of making revenue, which includes monetizing clothing or doing some sort of brand deal with that. Even something as simple as one of these print on demand services can easily add to your revenue as well. I think if there's ever some way to make something a live component where you could actually go on a tour like Pomplemousse is doing, that's another form of revenue that I don't think a lot of people realize is even a form. Hank Green and John Green both could easily sell out huge concert halls just by talking and meeting with people. And I think that's another revenue stream as well. And then also contracting out your services as someone who could help clients with your knowledge. It takes a lot to learn on YouTube. And you can be someone who could really help other people with the knowledge that you've gained. So there's what I always like to think, and where I'm always trying to come up with new ideas, is what are other ways to monetize content, or other ways, and even things like streaming. Streaming has been an amazing place for a lot of YouTubers to get content, to have some sort of donation stream where the campaign is for them. You're saying, hey, I want to, you know, either I'd love to make such and such a month, and that's what our goal is, or even something that's another goal-oriented option would be, I want to go on this trip and be at this convention so I can meet more people. We need to raise this much money. Or even just having it completely open where donations can flow in. We like to thank the people who donate, and it's as simple as that.
This is such a huge topic, and there's right. So much that you can do that we got to really drill down on this a little bit more, because I think, you know, whether you're, you know, and I've advised a lot of small businesses in the past, like you, Amy, Lynette, and Daryl, on, you know, how to use content to drive traffic. I mean, whether it's the automobile industry where you make that purchase like once every maybe 10 years, how to create content to generate a relationship with consumers and educate them, or maybe it's music, you know, and getting, you know, like I said, my friend who's got new music out there, and there's so many different areas of expertise, whether it's creative, whether it's focusing on YouTube, and it's very confusing to users who want to find the right marketer and find the right way to promote. And I think it's still a space that we're pioneering and we're trying to understand how to actually monetize and make a lot of money. Amy, what's your best advice to somebody who is trying to get started or find the best way to promote their content? What was your first piece of advice be to them?
In terms of getting started for monetization, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think the hardest part about creators is that they don't see the biggest opportunity, which is why I think Patreon and Kickstarter and all these things have gotten such attention. Because I think, especially with YouTube also announcing this tip jar that may or may not be a great thing, it's easy for creators to say like, oh, nonchalantly, if you would like to pay me for what I do, this is fantastic. Here's a way to do that. But it's easy. It's easier for them to do that. And I know it's really difficult for creatives, any creative, not just YouTubers, but creatives to say, I'm worth being paid for what I do. I spend a lot of time and skill and money on what I do, and I think I should get paid for it. So they have a hard time thinking outside of the box of, oh, maybe my audience can contribute, or Google will let me put ads around it, and things of that nature. Sponsorships are definitely an option. It's sort of just an expansion of what we're talking about with ads, right? It's essentially just your own ads that you control. But I think that there's so much more that a person actually has to offer, and they just don't give themselves that much credit. I often get the comments for my videos, what are you doing to monetize? You have no amount of subscribers that could possibly be paying your bills. How are you doing this? And it's really about the fact that I have a business that I'm able to exert more of my skill and energy on that actually pays me really well. And I'm treating the YouTube channel like a marketing channel. So it's funny when the audience appreciates it so much, they don't even realize that they're being marketed to. And maybe they're not the target audience every time. But the whole channel is a commercial for me. That's exactly literally right. What this comes down to. And you watching my video and you clicking this link and you going here and you going there and you tweeting me, that's inflating my thought leadership and my brand. That's going to help me make money with this LLC that I've got over here. How am I doing things over here? I'm consulting, I'm speaking. I might write a book one day. Maybe that'll help. It's all these other things. They're not thinking big enough, and you should think bigger.
You know, and Amy, you're spot on. I think you're spot on with that. I think the first thing that I would actually do is actually build a list. I would use Lynette's company or something similar to AWeber and start capturing those emails and start putting the pixel down for retargeting and remarketing and really building lists, because the list is power. Because once you can figure things out, you actually have a list of people you can email to, because ultimately you don't know all your subscribers. I mean, it's nice to have G+ integrated in to have a little bit of an idea who's actually subscribed to you. But if you can generate ways to capture that email, then when you can figure things out to how you're going to market to them or what you're going to sell to them or what you're going to do, you'll actually have a list to do it. And a great thing with an email list that I would encourage any YouTuber is to seed your videos. Send them an email out and say, hey, I had a brand new video going out, and you're going to get a whole ton of views immediately, which is going to give you better rankings in the algorithm.
We absolutely need an entire show just on email alone, because email is not dead. And there's so many different really cool ways you can use it. And yeah. I still check email.
I love email. And I would even say, going back to what Natalie and Jack were talking about in terms of external annotations and their vlog at the end of their videos, that is so huge. I think so many people are so quick to like make like a title intro for themselves, and it's like 15 to 20 seconds, and they throw it at the front of their video and then the content starts. Like, you're completely forgetting why people are coming to your videos in the first place. Wait until the end when they've watched your whole video and have enjoyed that experience. then say to them, like, hey, I'm so glad that you watched. I'm so glad that you've made it this far. Hey, if you want to do us a favor, click this annotation. It's going to take you to our website. Check out some more cool stuff there. Sign up for my email list, and we really appreciate it. See you on the next video. That outro screen is so much more important than people give it credit for. You've got to have the audience retention to make it happen, but that is where you get the advocates to move.
What's your best advice, gang, on measuring analytics? So, okay, they are trying spray and pray. They are putting things out there, but they really kind of need to measure where the results are coming from. Do you guys have any favorite tools for analytics on measuring, whether it's the YouTube analytics, which I know, Chad, you're a big fan of, or an external platform that kind of helps you measure your other social outlets?
I would say, girl.
I love it. Finally, everybody jumps in. That's what I've been wanting. So, Chad, you go first.
So just to cover the basic, normally whenever I'm looking at my analytics, I'm not trying to push people to a website or a blog or even a store. So my analytics are based around numbers on YouTube videos. And YouTube has some great built-in analytics for dealing with that. And that's what we use for OMG Craft to really see what audience we're hitting, where things worked in the video. There's lots of different functions, like you can see when people stopped watching your video, where do people fall off? Did people go back and watch a specific clip of the video over and over again? Those are all really good signs on how you're doing. They're not perfect signs. You're not reading anyone's mind, but they're really good ways to sort of peer into how your audience is using and watching your videos. So that's on the YouTube side of things. And also, generally, there's a few other services like Social Blade where that will help me look at other people's channels, because your analytics on your YouTube channel are really only for your own personal channel. And if I want to see, like, you know, so-and-so's channel is very similar to mine, I'd really like to see how much growth they have. Is there something that they did? Have they ever had a big jump in subscribers recently? What time was that? Why? Where was the correlation? And a service like socialblade.com is a really good service for that type of analytics. And all you have to do is type in OMG Craft Show in there. And that's the OMG Craft's YouTube channel. And so you can see subscribe counts, where they rank. Social Blade does this sort of ranking system. They're really powerful statistics.
We even know how much you make, Chad.
We make about, yeah.
Come on,
monthly earnings are about
to buy a Big Mac.
Yeah, exactly. And then the real powerful ones are actually the monthly sub numbers. Really help me from someone else. You can see there's a button underneath those numbers. See full monthly statistics, and those give you some graphs where you could easily dig down into when at a specific time did sub numbers start to increase. So you could see in April, we started making momentum on a channel that had been around for a few years. You can get a better idea of
what do you attribute that to, Chad? I mean, that is a pretty like significant jump, and I would say you've invested a lot of time in that channel. So why did it jump? What was the?
We found a few different things. One, at that time, I also started posting a video series on another very popular channel, which is kind of difficult, and it's still difficult every single week. It takes over 9 hours to make sure that video goes out, and we make no money off of that video, and a lot of effort, a lot of time goes into making a video for a channel that's not even my own channel. But we found that really helps. It's a much larger channel than ours, and it really helps bring people back to ours. We also found that at around that time, a few specific videos did very good on SEO. And like I was saying before, those were the locomotives for the channel moving forward. We only have about 5 or 6 videos that really get into the high, high numbers of, 200, 500, thousands views. But those videos are the ones that are, see there, the 500,000 on a few of them, much lower on some of the others. But those videos, which are doing well in SEO and which are doing well by being shared and maybe going viral a tiny amount, are really helping push the entire channel forward. And that's when we started publishing those types of videos.
See, there you go. Spray and pray actually works because you can...
We do kind of spray and pray. We kind of do.
Yeah. She's Amy says no. Amy says
like
no.
Like bringing it full circle. I don't know if I agree with it.
Yeah, I know. Right. Well, that's what I said. I don't know if I agree with it as a marketer. Okay. Well, this clearly is a conversation that we need to continue to, you know, have, and we can't cover everything in this show, but I want to thank everybody for joining in and talking about their input on how to actually use YouTube and other platforms to put your content out there. And we'll start with you, Amy. If somebody wants to connect with you and follow you or hire you, what's the best way they can do that?
You can watch my videos 3 times a week at youtube.com/savvysexysocial, and you can visit all the work that my company does at vlogboss.com.
Can't wait to have you here at the studio. Daryl, if somebody wants to connect with you, how should they do that?
You can go to youtube.com/Daryl Eves, and it's spelled a little bit different. It's DerrarlEves, or you can go to DerrarlEves.com.
Thanks again. Love your jumping in. And Lynette, love having you on. You've been on before, but you know, if somebody wants to connect with you, what's the best way they can do that?
Actually, the easiest way is to catch me on Twitter, which is at Lynette Radio. You can usually find me at work now. I've been there about 2 months at aweber.com, so I'll start blogging there soon. And I will actually be appearing at our conference at you think I would remember the name of it? Ascend Summit. It's in October in Philadelphia, so I will be on big stage then. So,
and Chad.
I do a few shows on this network that you're watching the show on. Reddit Up, OMG Craft, The Giz Whiz are all shows that I host. And you can also check out my personal channel at youtube.com/OMG Chad.
And with the exception of everyone but Chad, who's here every day, we'd love to have you here at the Brick House and do some fun stuff with you in person. Thanks, everybody, for joining in on the show.
Thanks so much.
And that was another episode of Marketing Mavericks. That's a big conversation and a lot to talk about. So we'll have to do part 1, 2, and 3, and 4, I'm sure. But tune in every day at 5 p.m. Pacific. That's 8 p.m. Eastern to catch our live conversation. Or you can follow us on Facebook by following me at Tanya Hall Radio. You can also go to Google+, look for Marketing Mavericks. We post there. And you can email me at mavericks@twit.tv. If you are a user of Twitter, you can find me at Tanya Hall Radio. I'm still looking to change that. And use the hashtag Marketing Mavericks. Want to hear about who you want to see on the show and what questions you have. Everybody, have a great day. Until then, we'll see you next week.